Welcome to The Aging Scientist, focusing on all things science and aging. I'm Clarissa Giebel, and I'm a researcher at the University of Liverpool. In this fourth season, I'll be tackling some of the basics of dementia. On today's show, I'll be talking to professionals providing care after a diagnosis, and we will compare how care is provided differently in the UK and Canada. Leah Reichardt is an Admiral Nurse Practitioner for the Royal British Legion. Dr. Robert Maiden is a geriatric psychiatrist and an associate professor in the Faculty of Medicine at the University of Toronto, Canada. Dr. Maiden is the psychiatrist-in-chief and deputy chief of staff at Bakerest and is involved clinically in long-term care consultation and outpatient psychiatry. His academic interests are in the areas of medical education and dementia. Robert is also the chair of the Products and Services Committee for the International Psychogeriatrics Association. Welcome, Leah and Robert. Great to have you on the show.
Hello.
So just for our listeners here, we've got a very early session for Canada. It's 6 o'clock there at the moment. So we're, I think, very appreciative of Robert joining us. So Leah, you're an admiral nurse.
Yes.
Can you explain to our listeners the role of admiral nurses? They do seem to be very UK specific and differ from other care providers.
Yes, we originated from Dementia UK, which was based in London, basically established by the charity off the back of a family whose husband had vascular dementia. There was very little support out there for them. The role of the admiral nurse is very difficult to describe because Dementia UK essentially own the brand of admiral nursing, and then host organisations will sort of employ us. So I'm employed by the British Legion, but I have colleagues in the NHS, have colleagues in hospices, and so the role can vary according to what your host organisation is looking for and what your stakeholders are looking for. So in short, we are dementia specialist nurses. My role is to support the families and carers of people living with dementia, and sort of that could be right from pre-diagnosis to bereavement support, and it's a quite a huge job. It does encompass quite a lot.
How many admiral nurses are there across the UK, do you know?
I'd suspect about 250 odd. That's not, I'd have to double check. And it is changing all the time. Dementia UK do have a helpline as well, which is staffed by admiral nurses, so people can access sort of specialist dementia support over the phone.
Yeah, I hear from pretty much any carer that that takes part in my research or that's part of our PPI groups, if they have had the benefit of getting support from an admiral nurse, they're only praising them in the highest tones because they really seem to provide that care that they wouldn't otherwise get after a diagnosis. So really positive. So I know also that there are dementia care navigators in certain patches of England at least, and also having done some research with the Netherlands, we found that there seem to be more frequent dementia care navigators over there, which really provide a benefit in that link contact, what happens after someone receives a diagnosis. How would you say that admiral nurses and dementia care navigators, where they exist, complement one another?
I'd say with the dementia care navigators, I think we're very lucky in Liverpool to have them because people have an immediate contact, don't they, to the services who are going to be supporting them. And then I think they signpost on, so they're very good at kind of referring on and signposting to other services. I would say that because of the sheer numbers on their caseloads as well, that we work very intensively with a much smaller caseload. So I would expect us to be in a sort of higher tier, maybe sort of tier three kind of intervention. We are dealing with the complexity because not everybody has a straightforward relationship with the person they care for or history, and families are very complicated. So I would say if a care navigators could really be, I think we complement one another, we can refer to and from each other. That's really, really helpful.
Absolutely.
And up, stepping down.
I suppose the key difference there is also that at Royal Nurses you are qualified nurses, so you've got your qualification background, whereas I know from talking to a few dementia care navigator services, at least across the north of England, that care navigators don't necessarily need a medical qualification, but it's more about having that expertise and experience of working in the sector to really navigate people to services and care.
Yeah, you know, I think in terms of the numbers that they see, that's really important for them, isn't it, to stick to that. And then if they want to tap into us, I think that's really, really helpful. And not everybody will need an animal nurse. So, yeah, there's room for everybody, isn't there?
Yeah, and so if some of our listeners now think, oh, okay, I would actually really, or my husband or my mother would really benefit from having support from an admiral nurse, how would they go about accessing that care?
I would suggest probably contacting the Dementia UK helpline in the first instance, because they will have a comprehensive list of what areas are covered. We're not everywhere. And obviously a service like ours is only open to specific beneficiaries of the Royal British Legion, but then we try to work with one another and find places that will help where we can. But I would say Dementia UK would be the first port of call, and Dementia UK are going to be running clinics across the country at some stage, which is very positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, so we'll put definitely the website of Dementia UK and the links in the bio of the podcast as well if you need some care. Robert, from Canada, have you heard of Admiral Nurses or Care Navigators before coming onto this show?
I've definitely heard of the concept of a Care Navigator, and I think it's an amazing concept. You know, when you're given a diagnosis such as dementia, any complex medical diagnosis, it would be very very beneficial for the patient and family to have someone to help them navigate the system. The system, medical systems are complex, and you know, people hear some of the information when they're given a diagnosis, but not all of it. And I'd like to think that most regions have something akin to care navigators. Although we don't have admiral nurses in Canada, it sounds like a brilliant idea.
So what's the care pathway like in Canada? I've done a bit of Googling and looked up, correct me if I'm wrong, it seems there's an estimated 500,000 people currently living with dementia in Canada. Is that right, or outdated stats?
Well, the numbers will keep increasing. And when you read the numbers about what's coming down the road, it's a bit staggering. So yeah, the numbers you're looking at are accurate. And, you know, Canada is perhaps slightly different than the UK, that we have a dementia, a national dementia strategy. But Canada is made up of various provinces and territories, all of which are in charge of their own healthcare, the delivery of their healthcare, the managing of their budgets, and there are differences in how they deliver care, and even how they fund care and medications. So there are subtle and sometimes important differences, and Canada is vast. So we have urban centers, like I live in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver, there's some, you know, Calgary, big cities, and that ranges all the way to extremely rural areas, especially for our populations that, you know, don't have a lot of access, where even having a primary care practitioner could be a challenge. And we have our Indigenous population, populations throughout Canada. So the delivery of care and access to care could differ quite a bit, and the roles of the various physicians can change quite a bit. And that's been one challenge, I don't think it's unique to Canada, but it certainly is a challenge in Canada. So the pathway, I don't know that, I think like most countries, we have a society, it's called the Alzheimer's Society. So when people are given a diagnosis of any type of dementia, whether it be Alzheimer's or frontotemporal dementia or dementia with Lewy bodies, there is a program called First Link, where the person is linked up with the patient and family are connected with the Alzheimer's Society. And the Alzheimer's Society's mandate is to provide education and support. And we believe that education is power. So education in the hands of the caregivers, families, and the patient, would lead to better outcomes and smoother care. And the Alzheimer's Society will provide support groups, also one-on-one support and education to a degree, and help with some care navigation, but certainly not to the degree of an Attenborough nurse. And I think to get that degree of support, it will depend again on from province to province what services they have, and who can access those services. So, for example, there are outreach teams, geriatric medicine outreach teams, or geriatric psychiatry outreach teams, where sometimes you can access a case manager. But sometimes those outreach teams are designated specifically for people who are having behavioral symptoms of dementia, behavioral and neuropsychiatric symptoms of dementia. So again, there's no one standard across the country, but their access to such things, especially with technology nowadays, it's becoming increasingly easy. I mean, telepsychiatry has become very effective. We've been doing it over the last 10 to 20 years. Way before COVID began, we were doing consultation to, I personally was doing consultation and continue to do so to Northern Ontario, Northwest Ontario, where there's no psychiatrist, and certainly not a geriatric psychiatrist or neurologist. But through telemedicine networks, we've been able to provide care and education to those that need it. But still different than the Attenborough nurse concept.
I know there's also some research from very remote area, rural areas in Canada. The group is called RADAR, I think led by Deborah Morgan. I've read some of her research as well. They're trying to do a lot of research into how care can be provided in those more rural, remote areas and overcoming those barriers. But you're also referring, I suppose there's this difference between the medical follow-up care that needs to be provided to people living with dementia, but also that more social angle of care that I suppose also often Attenborough nurses and care navigators or support workers, etc., can provide. I know you highlighted it's different in the different territories across Canada. Is there a specific type of guidance or role out there, maybe across the territories?
Yeah, I mean, there are, and I can't speak to every territory in Canada. I can speak to what I'm aware of, but what most people need, what most patients and families need when there's a diagnosis of, again, the diagnosis of dementia doesn't just affect the person with dementia. It affects the entire family, like any significant diagnosis, and the caregivers manage a great deal of burden and have tremendous responsibility. So we're not taking care of the person with dementia, we're taking care of the family. And the recipe is something that's, biopsychosocial. That's the framework that we continue to use, where there's medical intervention, biological intervention, whether it be medications or managing other medical comorbidities. But then there's the psychosocial component. So, we'd like to think that any person with dementia would have access to a day program to support, to finding a meaning or a role in their life, despite having a difficult diagnosis, meeting people and continuing to use their brain socially and recreationally. So the psychological part is about the transition about receiving such a diagnosis for the person with dementia, and of course their family who require a lot of support. Geriatric medicine physician, the neurologist, the psychiatrist, the primary care physician or the family doctor, we would say in some areas, that will provide a medical or a nurse practitioner who can provide a medical diagnosis. Could initiate medication, could manage to a certain degree the neuropsychiatric symptoms if and when they develop. And then we'll bring in others. And when we think of certainly the family physician, the primary practitioner, as the one who's navigating the care in a certain way, who's bringing in the other specialists, which include behavioral support specialists who are not physicians. These could be social workers, occupational therapists, psychologists often, who or personal support workers who have a great deal of experience and skill in managing complexities like behavioral symptoms, behavioral psychological symptoms of dementia or BPSD. And that's where you begin to leverage the strength of teams, outreach teams when needed to really support the patient and family and the caregivers who really need it. And so that type of care, including local day programs aimed at providing respite to the caregiver, providing stimulation to the person with dementia, and also using the rest of the system, depending where you are. So if you're living in a remote area, the question is, how is that different than if you live in a very urban area? And it is different, because if you're in a remote area, a small community, people know who you are. So if you're in town and you're looking lost, they know who you are, they know where you live, they know who to contact, the neighbors look out for you. It's sometimes a very different thing as opposed to living in a city of millions of people, where if you're lost, you're lost, and it's a different type of thing. But the basic ingredients of adequate medical care based on evidence, psychological supports, and social interventions, either in group, individually, with teams or individual physicians or other practitioners, including social workers, case managers. Those are the key ingredients. These are critical ingredients.
Absolutely. There needs to be that teamwork and good link up between health and social care. In the UK, I don't know whether you agree, Leah, but I would say in the past, maybe decade even, there seems to be much wider recognition and acceptance of dementia in the general population. And we have from the Alzheimer's Society every year in May, the Dementia Action Week, which is now called. Robert, would you say there's a general wide recognition of dementia in Canada, and also recognition from the government that things need to be done, or should there be more done?
Oh, there's definitely a recognition, and there's a lot of public education that takes place. And again, the various governments of the provinces and territories have done different things, but there's certainly been an increasing trend into investing in dementia care. Look, we'd love to cure this disease, prevent it from starting in the first place. We know we're not there. Attempts to find the cure, deter the generation of plaques and tangles in the person with dementia, and understanding, you know, what medications. We haven't had any big breakthroughs. I mean, yes, there have been some things, but certainly not a cure. So we're investing in the research, but also investing in the life of the person with dementia, and providing them with the education and support. So governments, provincial governments, have been dumping millions of dollars into various aspects of care, whether it's behavioral support teams, respite care, education, the different models of care, while the research continues. And there are small things. I mean, even when someone's diagnosed with mild cognitive impairment, mild neurocognitive disorder, meaning that they don't have dementia, they have cognitive issues, but they still function, so they're not functionally impaired. A percentage of those, some percentage, will convert over time to having dementia. And in that phase, what can we do to try and avert or reduce your chances? And that's an area of great focus, trying to reduce the incidence of this illness. Yeah, so the governments are investing heavily, and there's an awareness because people with dementia are showing up at the emergency departments with BPSD. And the caregivers are saying, sorry, I can't take this person home. I'm burnt out, or I've been threatened, or they're paranoid, or I can't look after them safely anymore, or I'm just not healthy anymore. And people end up in the emergency departments of acute care hospitals and have nowhere to go, and end up being admitted to the hospital. And that blocks another person from accessing a bed in a hospital. We're thinking this is not the right place for somebody with dementia. You might get control over their neuropsychiatric symptoms very fairly quickly. And then their bed space, they're in some provinces called alternate level of care. They're not receiving active care, but they're waiting to go somewhere into a long-term care home, an old age home or a nursing home. It's what they call in Canada, long-term care home or nursing home. And so it becomes a system issue because you end up with hospitals, acute care hospitals, housing people with dementia when they should be in a residential setting, either back home with the right supports or in a long-term care setting with the right supports. And again, this differs from province to province in terms of how things are done. So the general trend is an effort through investment, education, and programming to, you know, relieve the burden of the person who's caregiving, provide care in the home. Aging in place, aging at home is really what we try to do. Understanding that there's going to be a need to...
It's also incredibly confusing for people with dementia suddenly being placed in this different setting, in the hospital setting. Leah, is that something you've come across as well with the caregivers you work with, maybe?
I would say trying to prevent unnecessary hospitalisation is a huge part of our role because there's such significant functional decline in people living with dementia in hospital. And it just accelerates all of the issues that they had, didn't it? So it's we are having huge issues of people entering hospital, having very traumatic hospitalizations, being rapidly tranquilized when really we could have avoided all of this. So especially during COVID as well, because we'd have people go in, contract COVID, and then, you know, become more impaired, become bedbound. And then it's the family are catching up with this huge traumatic event in the life. So and then also the knock-on effect, isn't there, of we're very slow to discharge because we don't have the community support level that we would like. We don't have many home places at the moment in our region. So then people are staying longer and longer. It's a huge issue. I'd say a lot of our referrals might be the result of hospitalisation being very difficult.
Okay, I didn't realise that so many referrals come via that route, which is, I suppose, often that crisis point, isn't it, for people with dementia and carers. So would you say overall Admiral Nurses enable people with dementia to stay in their own home for longer by providing them with that care in the community?
That would definitely be the aim, definitely. So advanced care planning is quite a large part of our role. So if, say, for instance, a gentleman is 95 and he's living with a cancer and a dementia, and he might have very clear ideas about when he does and doesn't want to attend hospital. So we would want that documented. He might want to make decisions about his resuscitation. So we would work very hard to do that and to get very rapid medical support from the primary care teams and ICRAS. We have this sort of rapid support system, don't we? And make it very clear from the outset what this person would want from a hospitalisation and what they definitely wouldn't want. So it's quite a large part of our role as well.
And it sounds like you're really working with the person with the dementia and the family carers to navigate the system as much as you can.
And the earlier the better, really, while that person can make decisions alongside us.
So if you both could make one key change to dementia care, obviously I'm sure you want to do many more than one. I would love to. What would it be, Leah, if you could make one change?
A social care overhaul in this country, I think, would be so key. And then I think that the benefits to hospital services would kind of roll from that, wouldn't they? So I think I'd more respect for social care workers and the level of expertise that they have.
Absolutely. And it seems like the pandemic has just highlighted how little respect there has been before and how little recognition of the hard work that they do there is, at least in this country. So I would definitely support that as the one key change. And what about you, Robert? If you could make one key change.
Well, only one. That's just cruel. I have one. So many ideas. I'll say maybe two key changes. But I agree with Leah. But I guess from my perspective, there's two things. One is around access, and the other one is around behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia. So I think access. There's been some improvement with technology, but ensuring there's equitable access to specialists across the country for every individual and family would be critically important. And it simply isn't that way right now, due to the size of Canada and just the nature of rural care versus urban care, even urban. If you have memory problems and you live in an urban center and you want to go to a memory clinic, you might have to wait a very long time. But if I had to make the one big overhaul, it would be to have a really robust program for behavioral and psychological symptoms of dementia. These symptoms reduce the quality of life of the patient with dementia, the caregiver. They drive people into long-term care. They drive them into acute care via the emergency departments. It's an incredible challenge. The provinces, each province has their own way of managing things. Each hospital within provinces have their own types of services. Having one robust way of managing with the right services to prevent neuropsychiatric symptoms and to manage them when they do occur in a true biopsychosocial way. Especially what we know about, I prescribe medications. I deal with some very, very sick people with dementia who have severe symptoms, some aggression, psychosis, where medications are often going to be indicated. But we know generally that, unless there's imminent risk to the person with dementia or others around them, that the first line treatment for neuropsychiatric symptoms is behavioral interventions. And they're very hard to employ. They're hard because it's a resource issue. Whether you're in a long-term care home or in a residential setting, your own home, it's a challenge. One of our big successes in Ontario is through Baycrest has been what is called the Virtual Behavioral Management Program, Virtual Behavioral Management. It actually started before COVID because in our particular hospital, our quaternary care unit for behavioral symptoms, which is a provincial resource for the people who have the most treatment refractory neuropsychiatric symptoms or BPSD, it would end up on this unit. And there was a long wait list, just like with everything else, a long wait list. And it was always full. And they started seeing people virtually before they were admitted, seeing them in their homes, seeing them in acute care hospitals and managing the symptoms with unbelievable outcomes, with reducing the wait list by 80% by having using technology and just giving people access. So having a very robust way of managing behavioral symptoms with the right resources. I work in a long-term care facility. And having an extra person on the unit is a luxury. Someone who can you could sometimes even avert the use of medication if you have enough people there to manage people in terms of help them with their time, help them with multi-sensory stimulation, help them with other activities. And it's, to a certain degree, it's a personnel issue and that requires a huge investment. But that's the fantasy.
Mm-hmm. No, certainly important, the behavioural issues that many people with dementia are facing, and certainly certain subtypes are particularly facing. And I just wanted to refer to the International Psychogeriatrics Association here, which we're both members of, Robert. And at least for me personally, it's been really beneficial being part of this professional international network to connect with fellow researchers and learn from them and other clinicians, and really having that mix of professionals to also conduct international research, but also educate one another about what's happening. A little bit like this podcast, we're learning here about, Leah and I are learning what's happening in Canada. I wasn't aware of all of these things before. What do you think are the benefits, or have been the benefits so far for you being part of the IPA?
Yeah, thank you. The International Psychogeriatric Association is an amazing organization that I've become involved in. And I currently chair the products and services committees. And we have our products, our journal club, our debate series, our webinars, et cetera. There's the annual meeting. So there's a lot of benefit in terms of education for all the healthcare professionals and public education initiatives, and our connections with various agency and organizations. It's really about the people though, Clarissa. So I really think that being part of an organization like this, you get to meet so many people, colleagues from different places and different specialties, who all have the same interests and can share stories, experiences, ideas, work together to produce educational interventions for people, so that we could learn together. We could take those ideas, share them with our colleagues and where we live. And it's very powerful. I mean, and it's amazing to do a journal club or have a debate where you're there sitting with people from all over the world, and everybody's dealing with the same things, but in a different way. And in Canada, we call it geriatric psychiatry. In the UK, we call it old age psychiatry, but it's the same thing. And we start comparing notes and talk about our challenges. Yeah, I really, the products and services from the IPA are really meant to give people an opportunity to learn with and from each other. And I encourage our listeners, your listeners, to look into the International Psychogeriatric Association. And they offer all sorts of memberships, discounts for students, and lifetime memberships. A really phenomenal organization.
Absolutely. And I can also say personally that I was apprehensive of joining the journal club where one of our papers was discussed, but it was actually a very nice discussion, a very pleasant discussion about the topic area, and there was no review or two there. So it's really great, and you can connect with a lot of international people to have a good chat. Something that we're unfortunately missing these days because of COVID, because we can't go to conferences, so everything's virtual. Well, I think that's all we've got time for today. Thank you, Leah. Thank you, Robert, both so much. I hope we've all learned a bit from what's happening on the other side of the globe. So if you want to learn more about Leah's or Robert's work, have a look at the bio with more details. And if you want to learn more about Admiral Nurses, join the next Liverpool Dementia Aging Research Forum webinar on the 30th of March. And for more discussion into the basics of dementia, have a listen to my next few podcasts. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.